staying warm or cool wherever you live. Hey, Tim, wherever you you live, because I don't know about y'all, but down here in Texas, it's 85 degrees, okay? And then tomorrow it'll be 60, but it's 85 here, and we're all just suffering with allergies. But we hope you guys have a fantastic Monday. You guys listening to Author Talk with me, Amy Valerie Russell, and our lovely author guest today is Tim. So you guys, let's dive in to the weekend, right? So I had an uneventful weekend. I stayed home, tried to get caught up on laundry because Russell knows, he always makes fun of me. I struggle hard at laundry. I just do. I struggle. It's one of those that if you put it in a basket, I won't fold it. So I got to fold out of the dryer. We turn the dryer back on 5 or 6 times because I'll only fold if they're warm. It's just, it's a thing, Tim.
Does Josh do, does Josh do his own laundry?
No, I do it.
See, I made the big mistake when I got married 41 years ago. Huge, huge mistake. Telling my wife, don't touch my laundry. I don't want anything pink. And she's like, fine. So to this day, I have to do my own laundry.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, he will do it sometimes if he needs something washed and I'm behind. Right. But no, generally I do it. I do everybody's laundry. I don't like the way that he does laundry because he'll only fold his laundry and not everybody else's. Everybody else's goes in a basket. He will only fold his, and that makes me mad. So I did that. I went and checked on the house. The house is getting installation, and then we're going to get shingles and drywall and paint this week, you guys. And then brick's going to go up. So it's been a fun whirlwind adventure. I did my frame walk last week, which I learned a lot about. Okay, learned a lot.
Did you find any mistakes?
Yes. Well, you know me, Russell. I am on top of my game.
I believe in that. As over the 40 years I practice law, I always advise people in your situation where they're inspecting something like that, take the most negative person in the family with you. The person that says,
negative,
that's wrong, but... and that's wrong, and that's wrong. So,
well, I'm not the most negative person, but I am very detail-oriented.
Yes, you are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean about the negative person. I used to, before we would buy a house or a car, I used to always take my mother-in-law with me. Boy, she could find what was wrong and tell me about it.
I should take your advice on that one. No, I'm the most detail-oriented in my family, and I have the most time. Josh goes on the weekend. I usually take him on the weekend. So we got to do that. He had questions when we went and took a video, so we would kind of like HVAC engineering questions, and I'm over here like, I don't like this outlet. It needs to be moved. I'm missing outlets.
Exactly. That's important stuff because you'll live with it until you rent that house out too.
Yeah, and I don't know if any of you guys know this about me. You probably don't. We learn something new about me every Monday, Tim. But I don't like things not in a straight line. It will bother me and really bother me. And so I have some recessed lighting that is centered with the room, and the room expands as you walk. So then they're offset. Oh, that bothers the crap out of me. And I'm like, but it wouldn't make sense to center it because then there's more like ceiling over here, and then that would really bother me. So I'm going to put beams in between so I don't notice it.
Amy, that's ironic. When we spent 3 weeks in China, one thing that I noticed was all private sidewalks were curved. None were straight. I thought that was so strange. And
Is it like a feng shui thing?
No, it's funnier. Because I asked, why do you do that? And they said, because ghosts can't turn corners if they're following you.
Oh, now that makes me feel a little better.
That was an answer. And she was serious when she answered it. I was like, oh.
Okay.
That's the least expected answer you thought you were going to get.
I know.
Right?
It was cool. It was very cool.
Oh, my goodness. But we have more fun times. Metal's getting her tonsils out. I want to say a week from this Tuesday, March 5th. So she'll be doing that. And then
notice everybody, she scheduled it after author talk.
I did. I'm telling you, I did. I tried to do it on a Friday, but I got it on a Tuesday and that works for me. But you guys, this upcoming weekend, I'll share it again next Monday. But this upcoming weekend, I have signed the girls up for a fairy tale ball that they're going to, and all of the princess Disney characters are going to be there. And then if they're like, if you have a little prince, and all of the princes and superheroes and all that are going to be there, and they get to meet with them and like have like a royal makeover and fairies everywhere and tiaras and glitter. And I'm just so excited. And I signed Josh up to take them. So he has to come with us.
Okay, that's funny as hell.
So it's going to be so much fun. I'm going to take them with us.
But those are such perfect memories, though. You know, those are
excited. I'm so excited for it. But speaking of this weekend and everything that has passed, what all did you guys do this weekend? Who wants to go first?
Russell, you go.
Okay. Mine's long. Tim, this is usually not this long, but I have lots of funny things I'm going to talk about. A couple of years ago on this show, someone from Nashville, an author from Nashville, we were interviewing. And by the way, I'm in Atlanta and it's cold here. I'm out in the forest, but it is cold. Talked about Nashville hot chicken and was like, what is that? What is that? Sandy and I couldn't figure out what is that. And I went and tasted some like it in wherever I was, Houston, wherever I was that week, and reported back on the show. Oh, it's terrible. It's terrible. Well, I spent last week in Nashville, as you know. That's why I wasn't on the show last week. And I think there's an Air Force jet about to come over. But, and I went to Hattie B's. Put it up there, Amy. I got to tell everyone, when you visit Nashville, go to Hattie B's Hot Chicken. Oh, my gosh. My eyes watered. It was so good. So I have retracted what I've said about hot chicken in the past. Sandy, you've got to try hot chicken from Hattie B's if your brother from Alabama ever takes you to Nashville. It's spectacular. And she didn't get the picture up.
It's working on multiple screens. My laptop's plugged in and this one's plugged in.
The rule is for Amy, you're supposed to turn everything else off before we start the show.
Hey, I did, but I have four monitors, Russell. And it all things.
We always have problems like this with Amy. Okay, this is Hattie B's chicken. You got to have a beer with it because it's so hot. It is spectacular.
But did you buy the shirt? Did you like it so much you bought the shirt?
I don't buy the shirts.
Oh, man. Okay, so you have to explain hot chicken to me again, though, because there's a place here in College Station that's literally just called hot chicken. And I really just thought that they meant it was fresh chicken.
It's spiced up. My taste buds said it was black pepper.
Oh, okay.
Is what I think it was. Okay. But it is spectacular. It's done right. If it's done wrong, it's black peppered up bad chicken. But
do they have different levels of spice, Russell?
I don't know.
See,
the trouble with being an original Texan and moving over to the South. Texas is not the South. Texans know that. We're used to spicy food. And in the South, it's pretty bland. And in urban Atlanta, it's very bland. So if I was actually ordering it and they had choices, I would have ordered the spiciest because that's what you have to do. Yeah. But it is spectacular. Second thing that I need to talk about is my nephew. And I wanted to tell this story because I think this is kind of congruent with what Tim's going to be talking about today. And I think it would be very inspirational for authors with dreams. My nephew, Brad Johnson, grew up in Amarillo, Texas. It's a little bitty town. It's where they build nuclear weapons. So if they blow up, no one cares and it won't kill many people. And he went to a little school called West Texas A&M, which is not known for being a Hollywood musical hotbed, to say the least. But he was incredibly talented, and he and Andrew decided we're going to LA and we're going to try to get, he wanted to get in the music composing business. And he decided Hollywood was the place to do it. And this is just a couple of years ago. He's still kind of a kid, right? And put it up on the screen, Amy. I am so proud of this. He just made his third credit in a movie, in the new Bob Marley movie, One Love. He gets a credit, and you can see it in the left side in the column. It says Bradley Johnson. Oh, my God. He's living his dream. He dreamed it. He didn't have any reason to think he could do it except his own talent. But he took the chances and he's living it. And I think that's very inspirational for people that think, you know, I can't do it. Well, Brad did it. Brad can do it. Maybe you can do it. So I think that's very exciting. I'm very proud of him. And when I saw what Tim's book was about, I got really excited about that too, because I think that's really congruent with what he's trying to say to people. My third one is on our author page on Facebook. We just had, and I gotta have to put my glasses on. So on the author's page of Author Talk, we had the most comments on any subject we've ever had discussing a subject. And it's a stupid, silly little subject. Nevertheless, the question was, what is your opinion about the fact that you were always supposed to put two spaces after a period, but that rule is gone now. It's one space, right? Question is, people like me, I have transitional issues about that. And
me too.
Yeah. And that is, Mark Blanton wrote, I still put one space after commas and semicolons, two after colons or ending punctuation. For me, it has little to do with having first learned to type on a typewriter. I just find it easier to read. I actually agree with that. I do too. Jennifer Snow said, it's totally ingrained. I always do two spaces. It looks odd to me when there's only one. I've actually, not thinking, corrected myself and put two spaces while I'm writing. I actually do that, which is a mistake now. Clancy Weeks says, keep in mind that one space after punctuation is also wrong. Real typesetters use the M quad or punctuation space. You know that.
I didn't know that you weren't supposed to put two spaces. I didn't know that.
You're muted, Tim. Okay, you know that. Okay, K.L. Forsland said, it's fixable during editing with a simple search and replace. That's what I always thought. Tim, wait, how do you do it?
Well, same. I mean, I did it two spaces all the time, and then, but I... follower, so I just went right into the one when they told us to do the one. So if they tell us no space, I'm gonna go with no space or four spaces. I don't care.
Wow.
Well, I see, my thing is I still have, it's easier for me to read. Jamie Portland said, I had to retrain my Gen X thumbs. Gen X, that's like after me. Jeff Hicks says, my generation was the last to learn that, and I still do it. And Paige Hassel said, I'm a total geek about punctuation and I'm silently judging everyone. But I stopped as soon as I learned the rules had changed and for a reason. Okay. That was just some of the many. And I got to tell you, I had a lot of fun with this. I thought it was really funny, the different statements. And I really enjoyed listening to all our viewers' opinions on that. I know it's a simple little silly thing that writers worry about. Most people don't worry about it. People that write reports, I think they have to worry about it a great deal, because God forbid with some bosses, if your report is slightly incorrect. But so that was my weekend. I've had a great weekend, and, what about you, Valerie and Tim?
I was just kind of like winding down from my whole week last week. I had just different projects wrapping up. And so I was just, we went to Star Pizza on a Friday. We tried to get to the rodeo and we're like, this is taking too long. I can't do it. I'm not going to go. We turned around and went to Star Pizza and had the best time ever. And just the weekend was kind of slower, just getting things done, but visited our mother-in-law and that was good.
That's terrible. I got to tell you, Star Pizza has a pizza named the Maryland, which is my antagonist, Tim, in my series.
Uh-huh.
And so we would always get the Maryland at Star Pizza. I loved it. I even had a picture. It got like 10,000 hits once with my comment about Maryland and the Star Pizza.
Well, that was the place David and I had our second date 34 years ago. So every time we go there, we're like, yeah, we're glad to be back. Glad to be back. Still ordering the same thing.
I love it. We have like 40 years and 30 years. Oh, this is wonderful. Yes. I love it. I love it. Tim, what about you? What did you do this weekend?
You know, I live in Minnesota, but for the winter, we travel down to Arizona. And so my wife and I are in Arizona, and our oldest son brought his two kids, our grandsons. And so we got to hang out with them. But when you're retired and writing and speaking and doing that, it's every day is Saturday, every day is a weekend. And so happy Saturday, everybody.
No, yay. I love it. You got to see your grandsons even better.
Well, yeah, they're still here. It's wonderful. It's
great. That's awesome.
Yep.
I have to thank everybody listening to us. Tim, we're ranked top 10 independent book podcast in America, which when we got that notice, we were like, what? We're very grateful about it. Most people listen to our podcast during the week. They don't listen to our show live on Monday morning. And we want to thank them for listening to us. Amy, where can they find us? Even I can find us.
Yes, you guys, even Russell Little can find us. No, you guys can find us anywhere you can listen to a podcast. So my go-to ones that I look for podcasts, Amazon, Spotify, Google, Apple, even though I don't have an Apple, my family does. Apple, Good Pods, all of those places that you can listen and search for podcasts. You can find us. Type in Author Talk. The crimson, red, and gold is our logo when we rebranded, which Dina Ray did. You guys know we've had Dina on before. So with you, Russell can find us, you can find us. We are incredibly humble and grateful that you guys listen to us and like the show. It all started with an idea from Russell, and you were a part of us 8 years ago. You remember we used to go to his place in downtown Houston and shoot it live from my phone or Sandy's phone. I would turn around and chime in, and now look at what we have evolved to. And we have many more things coming. We've talked with so many amazing people within the writing and publishing community that we've had the opportunity to talk to and grow, and have multiple people back on that have continued to write and to learn more about authors and everybody within this community like Tim. So with that being said, Valerie.
Amy, hold on. What about your event coming up, the Women in Publishing?
Oh, Valerie, yes. See, I'm telling you, this is why we are a team, and the team makes the world go round, even though Russell doesn't play by teams. Yes, so Women in Publishing Summit is coming up. I believe it is next week. It is the week that my daughter has her tonsils removed. I am personally speaking on the 8th at noon our time, and I'll be talking about blending PR and social media and just marketing in general, blending them together, how to make that be successful for you and have a successful book launch now and later if you're deciding to relaunch a book. So we'll be talking about all of those things. I will have a speaker booth there that you can also come and chat with me.
So is that online only, or that's in person, or both?
No, so it is online entirely. It will be for 3 days. I will post some more information I have about it in the group to just be aware of. There's several other events going on that I'm in the middle of and trying to keep my head straight. And you guys know me for 8 years. I'm like a chicken when its head cut off. Okay. So that's currently what will be going on, but I'll put more information in the group. So remember, and it's not just for women, though it is called Women in Publishing. It is for everybody within the writing and publishing community and any type of journey that you're on to becoming an author. Whether you're well seasoned and you've done this hundreds of times, or you're dabbling, just trying to figure out if it is something that you want to go down. Hey, James, this is the perfect conference for you. If you have Ingram Spark questions, they will be one of the sponsors. You can go and shake them if you want to, because we all have that love-hate relationship with them. But Valerie, let's get Tim talking about his books before you have to go and me and Russell take over, because there's no telling what happens when we take over.
That is so true every time. So Tim, let's talk about, so you were a retired police chief. How did you make that journey into becoming an author? Were you always writing while you were working, or how did that happen?
Well, I was always writing, but it was always police reports. And when I started writing, I retired 7 years ago, and at the ripe old age of 50, and I just shifted gears, and I started speaking professionally right when I retired. And then people kept saying, you know, you should write a book. You should write a book. You should write a book. And so I started writing about 7 years ago, just writing stories. And they all sounded like a police report. You know, it was choppy and to the point and just the facts, ma'am. And
I kind of like police reports. I've read them for 40 years.
Exactly. Yeah. And so probably about 4 years ago, I started working with writing coaches, and, you know, we talked about the writing styles and telling that story and showing people what you're talking about, and instead of just telling them. And then, so the book kind of laid dormant for a few years where I was writing these stories. And about a year ago, I got a writing coach, and, you know, I gave him all my stories and in what I thought the order should be. And then he unraveled them and just did a brilliant job of putting the stories into the right order, and so that the book made sense. I am brand new. When I retired at 50, a friend of mine gave me a book, The Last Mile by David Baldacci. And I had never read for fun before. And so there I was, 50 years old. We went to Florida for vacation, and I couldn't put the book down. And I was kind of hooked on books at that point. And since then, I've been introduced to all these other authors, and I've grown an appreciation for this author community. But then I also wrestled, as I was getting closer to finishing this book, I wrestled with that, like, who am I? I mean, who am I to write a book? And what if somebody doesn't like it? And so then when I got my first three chapters back from my writing coach, I was like in panic mode. I thought, this is stupid. I'm just going to just put it. Let's just, you know, I already paid the guy. I'm just going to leave it at that. And that fear, you know, that imposter syndrome or whatever we call it. But it gripped me. And then as time went on, and I started reading it more and recognizing, and then when I started getting feedback from people that have read it, it's just now the momentum is building. It's my whole purpose for writing the book was to leave a legacy for my grandkids, and a legacy that my mom started, and this I am, I can, I will attitude, and how do we navigate the crappy parts of our lives, because there are challenging parts. But how do we navigate those while still looking for the beauty? And that really is shining through in the book, I believe. And that's the feedback I'm getting from people that in challenging times. And that's, you know, we're in challenging times.
Yeah, I think one of the things I read, it said the beauty of the chaos. And is that how the chaos shaped your writing style and your message that you're trying to portray in your book?
Right. Exactly. And that's just it. It's in my own personal mistakes and my habits and my failures, you know, and my successes. And, you know, law enforcement was a challenging career, and it was, nobody called 911 to say that their son Billy got an A on his report card. And it was always negative. And you're always on a traffic stop. You're always looking for the worst that could happen on that traffic stop. And it's hard to shut off, you know, when you get home, people say, well, just wipe your feet on the mat before you go in and leave your work at work. And it's great in theory, but it doesn't work that way. And so I made it through 28 years in the criminal justice field, and I have a great attitude. And so people would ask me, how is it that you have a smile on your face after all you've been experiencing? And it's like, well, so that was my big purpose behind the book, was to put that in, like the techniques that I've been using throughout my life. And in the last 5 or 6 years, I've been studying these, the psychology behind them. How do they work? Why do they work? Do they work? And how can we beef up our own attitudes without that optimism of, oh yeah, everything's sunshine and lollipops, because it's not. But there is a lot of beauty out there though.
And I'm sure you saw that even through, like you were saying, you just like the, you know, the stops, the reports, all these things. And you're still seeing, like, I'm sure there's always like a positive edge. You're like, this person is okay. Or this didn't happen this way. That was, could have been worse, or things like that. Just kind of, you have to like put the good aside almost to get that met, you know, to heal yourself almost.
Right. And I see that now, but I didn't see it in, you know, early in my career, it was very much us versus them. Russell, I don't know if you were on the defense side or the prosecution side.
I was defense.
Oh, yeah. See, now you were the them. And, but, and then we all get into that, don't we? That whole us versus them mindset, whether it's political or, you know, maybe you're a supervisor at work and maybe your subordinates get that us versus them. And even like in law enforcement, it was night shift versus day shift. You know, the until you become that other side, then you recognize, you know, hopefully the older you get and the more wise you get, the more you recognize that, you know, there really isn't an us versus them. I mean, the four of us could have a list of five topics and we may or may not agree on any of those five topics. But the reality is we all have needs and desires and goals. And so that's, you know, finding that commonality too, between us all is critical, you know? And so, but we, it's easy to get into that trap, especially with online, you know, social media. You can get into that echo chamber of, yeah, you know, that guy's an idiot. And actually, he's not an idiot. He's really smart. He just disagrees with what we're saying. But it's so easy to hurl insults and then just block out everybody else that disagrees with you and label them as ignorant or whatever. But and it's more challenging, I believe, to sit back and kind of sift through that and recognize that, yeah, well, Russell and I may disagree, or Valerie, you know, she and I agree on this, and Amy, she's just out on her own playing field. But you know what? By golly, we can.
She is out on her own playing field.
I am 100%. I do like Tim. I was waiting. I like how you said it's not all sunshine and lollipops, because I always say it's just puppies and rainbows, right? Yes. That's yeah. Like my go-to saying, and now my kids started saying it, right? And so
Amy's a strep throat every 2 months. That's what her.
That's a true statement. But I find that your book is coming at a time that it is needed, because you did mention social media, right? Which is my realm, right? And it has beautiful accolades in terms of marketing, right? It does amazing things in terms, yep, of marketing, right? But in terms of positivity and mental health, it's done some pretty negative things, right? And as someone that works within that, I've done it for a long time, I will totally own that. It does do some negative things, especially to younger generations, right? That are just coming up, mm-hmm, and feeding positivity. And you have all the cyberbullying and all of these things that go to it, right? But you do have younger generations, and I never claim my generation, because I don't like to claim them, but I am a millennial, right? And so we came up with our own challenges, right? And evolved with social media and all of those things. But when it comes to finding your own beat, like I say, puppies and rainbows, right? Because it just puts me back in a positive spot, because those are the two things that I really like. And so it's one of those things where helping them find their beat, you know, find your beat, as your book is mentioned, I think is very pivotal right now. And I think it's very important, especially when you're having more conversations in terms of mental health and finding the beauty and everything that's around you, and not surrounding yourself with negativity, which is incredibly difficult to do, right? Because it's fed to you. It literally is fed to you. If you're in commercials and if you're a woman, you're in commercials and you have body images and all these things going around, right? It's fed to you. So your book has come at the right time, I would say. But I like your sunshine and lollipops. I've never had anybody else say something like that, and so I feel like we've bonded now over
sunshine and lollipops.
I love it. I love it.
And how are you guiding people through your book, you know, to get that mindset?
Just by being – so I'm a keynote speaker, and that's another – source of where this book came from. And when I'm speaking, we ride a roller coaster of emotions, literally. I mean, I'm an entertainer and musician. I've been doing it forever. And so I'll start out picking and grinning with a song. And then, so right away they're thinking, oh, who's this guy? You know, and then we start talking about stories. You know, I'm a storyteller, and we'll talk about experiences that I had, that us versus them, and that negativity, that toxicity. And then I talk about the tactics that I'm using to remain positive. And then we get really deep and talk about mental health and wellness and suicide. And then we pull out of that with some more humor. And so we're laughing and crying and singing and doing this whole roller coaster throughout the keynote. And then I wanted something that would follow up the keynote. One of my signature stories is about a gentleman named Norman. But there's so much more to the story about Norman than the 3 minutes I'm giving him in my keynote. I had a really great relationship with my father. And so there's more to my dad than the 5 minutes I'm giving him in my keynote. And so the book follows a similar flow where it's telling stories about challenges that I've had. And, well, there I am. And yes. Two ratings. Thank you, two ratings. Get on there and rate.
Hey, there are two five-star ratings, okay? They're not just any. Ratings. They are five-star ratings.
And I don't even know who they are, so that's even better yet. the whole flow of the book is similar to my keynote where I share the stories as experiences and as a speaker and as an author has nothing to do with me, right? Because I want the reader or the listener to take my stories, plug them into their lives and say, you know what? I never had a good relationship with my dad, but this guy did. But this guy's dad reminds me of my Aunt Clara, you know, that yes. Same personality. And so they can relate to people in the stories. And then the failures that I made, the mistakes that I made, hopefully people can resonate with that. You know, I had a real struggle with alcohol, and that was part of my numbing device as a police officer. And so I talk about that quite a bit and my challenges with that and the hypocrisy that goes along with that as being this guy going out and arresting DWIs and then driving drunk, you know, it's just, so I'm very open. And that was another difficult and challenging part of releasing the book. It's like, okay, well, this is pretty raw, you know, and I don't know that I'm ready. And it involves my wife and my kids and are they ready, you know? And so it was, the whole writing process was so healing. And people had talked about that. And people said, you know, this, when you are an author, it'll open up doors and it'll, you'll be able to communicate with people in a whole different, venue and manner. And I knew that in my head, but my heart wasn't 100% convinced that this was the right path. And then once the book came out and I held it in my hand and I was like, oh my gosh, I have a book with my name on it. It feels good. The paper feels wonderful. And it's just, it was, the whole process was incredible. And my goal is that people will read it. It's a quick read. People are saying that they're reading it in one setting, like 2.5 hours. So it's 132 pages, but they're going through it. And that's the feedback I'm getting has just been so like rewarding and overwhelming and humbling. I just love it, love it, love it. So I'm happy to be on an author podcast. Are you kidding me? It's amazing. So thank you for the opportunity.
Well, I'm so happy for you that, you know, all of this came to fruition in general, just because it sounds like, you know, it's just you poured your heart and soul into it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm done to ask a couple of questions. And I know, Valerie, you're about to go.
Yeah, okay. I'm so sorry I have to leave y'all, but it's been great seeing everybody. Talk to you
soon. Good to meet you, Valerie. Take care.
Thanks.
Okay, Tim, this is my question. What was the emotional process you went through to reveal what you just told us in the book?
Yeah, I started.
How did you do that? And how did you do that with your family first? How did that work?
Yeah, so I started out very guarded. Even when I was speaking, I started out guarded. And I worked with a speaking coach about 7 or 8 years ago. And that's what she told me, you know, be vulnerable. And I'm like, I'm a cop, you know, I mean, I just retired and there's no way I was going to be vulnerable. And she said, well, I guess you're not ready yet. And I'm like, who are you to tell me that, you know? And so then it was like a self-reflection of how much do I offer people? And then as I was speaking, so my stories, as I was writing during that time, they were funny. They were very, you know, kind of far back and removed. Didn't really have a lot of emotion in them other than humor. And because there are a lot of funny things happen in law enforcement too. And so then as I started speaking and I recognized the more open I became about mental health and wellness. There was no way I was going to talk about suicide. It wasn't going to happen. And as I started to, I watched the reaction that people had, and people would line up to come up and talk to me afterwards and tell me about their mental health journey. And it was like constant. And so then I realized then the more open I became as a speaker and the more open I began writing, then it was reciprocal. I mean, people would open up to me, and I thought, well, what else is there? I mean, what's my purpose here? I'm hopefully here. I have 3 music gigs lined up for when I'm 102. So I have to stay around till I'm at least 105. But anyway, so we're here for however long a period of time. And if I can say something, or if I can write something that will help people, and the more open I become, that's what I'm here for. And for the family piece of it, I think my wife was probably the one most affected by the writing. And I think when she started reading it, it was a lot like how I felt when the book first came out. Is like, I don't want this book out. You know, I was kidding. Never mind. It was fun to write, but I don't want anybody to read it. But I think once both of us, we hit submit to Anne, our publisher, we hit submit together. And like, this is real. It's going to her. And then when we first got the book and started reading it, we're like, okay, well, the train's moving, and we'll see what happens. And when we see the reactions that people are giving us, I think that makes it easier for us both to share our story. And but it is a challenge, and it's a huge challenge, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, or I think any kind of writing, you're revealing part of yourself. And whether it's, you know, a character in your book, but all of it goes back to us as the authors, and it's definitely a challenge. And I think the best way to do it is just to do it, pull that Band-Aid off. And
yeah. Well, I mean, you're definitely putting a piece of your heart and soul out there, whether it's really personal, like your book has very relatable subject matter to it, or it's a world, you know, in terms of fiction that you've created that has been inside you that you're wanting to get out in the story that's been out. So either way, it's extremely personal. Right. And so when you have to go and take that leap and jump off, and you're being vulnerable with people you do not know for their feedback, in which you do not know what it's going to be, right? That's when you have to separate from it being as personal as it is. And, you know, maybe it's just not a good fit for everyone, but your book is definitely a good fit for everyone. It is something that needs to be held. And we're having a lot more conversations. Hopefully Russell will agree with me. It's a lot more open than it used to be in terms of mental health and having those conversations and checking on your mental health and your friend's mental health and just being there. But like I have told many authors, and I've told Russell himself before everything, people buy or find interest in things that they feel like they can relate, or someone fills that hole for them. Right. And so that's what makes it so hard for an author to put their book out, because they don't know how that's going to be reciprocated or how that's going to be taken. But Russell, you were going to unmute. What were you going to say?
Okay. Here's another question I think some of our listeners would like an answer to. How did you start becoming a speaker? How did that happen once you retired and you started writing? We occasionally hear listen to people that are struggling with wanting to do that, can't figure out how to do that. How did Tim do that?
Right before I retired, about 6 months before my retirement, the chief of police from a metropolitan police department near Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota, he's a friend of mine. He called me up. He said, "Brother, would you come and share your leadership journey with my leadership team?" And I had thought about speaking, but I didn't know much about professional speaking. Like, how do you do it? You know, how do you get paid? But he was a friend. And I grabbed my guitar and I went down to his police department. And it was about 20 men and women from sergeants, captains, commanders, all the way up to the chief of police. and they had just been involved in an officer involved shooting. They shot and killed an individual. I didn't know any of this going into the room. And so the room was tense, and I'm up there with my guitar and my uniform, and you know, and I'm sure they're thinking, oh crap, we're going to hold hands and sing Kumbaya. And so here I am, you know, and we rode that roller coaster, and we were laughing and crying and learning and listening. And it was, and I got into the parking lot afterwards, and I called my wife, and I was 6 months from retirement. I knew I was retiring. When I was in kindergarten, I knew I was going to be a police officer. It was a calling. There was no question I was going to be a police officer. Now, 6 months before I retire, I'm calling my wife and I'm shaking. And I called her up and I said, I have just found my next thing. And it was my next calling. And it was, and I'm humbled by that, because a lot of people go through life not knowing what they want to do when they grow up. And so I had the blessing of two callings in my life. So, and I knew at age 50, I knew I didn't have 15 years to build this thing. How do I build a keynote? How do I find the audiences? And so I hired a coach right away, and to help me find my keynote, find my voice. And that's when we talked about suicide and mental health. And it's not a deep, dark topic that we just, it's not all I talk about is suicide. And it catapulted. So I started doing it. And I think the music makes it interesting, makes it more memorable. I only do about three songs during a presentation, but it makes it memorable. The stories make it memorable. The fact that we're emotional doing it, we're laughing 1 second and doing the ugly laugh, cry, snort thing, you know, it's, so all of that, I think, makes it more memorable. And then so in 70 minutes or 60 to 75 minutes that I have with them, I get to share this message of techniques and tactics, how to find our beat, the rhythm of life. And then, so the book was kind of a natural progression from that. And I already have another book in my head, which is crazy, because 5 years ago, I would have thought there's no way I'm going to have a book, much less another book in my head. So
welcome to being an author. Welcome to being an author.
Absolutely amazing.
Russell.
Okay. Where can we find you singing these songs on YouTube?
I have a YouTube channel. So there's a few songs on there. It's Off Duty Chief, I think, or Off Duty. Tim Agerbratton, anyway.
You need to be ready for that, Tim.
I know I do.
If you're going to tell stories about singing songs during your speech,
I can find you, Tim. It's okay. I can find you.
No, but Russell's right. To his point, I need to get better at that. So, and there's only a few songs on my YouTube channel because it was, you know, am I an author? Am I a speaker? Am I an entertainer? And so... Right. So I'm struggling with that identity too, but I think the identity is yes, all of that.
Yes.
And then, so the music piece of it is more than just a schmuck up there with his guitar. And, you know,
I do hate those guys.
Yeah, no. And it's, but it's that entertaining piece. And I'll make up the Amy and Russell song, you know, off the top of my head. And
there you go.
It'll be a huge hit, you know. And so I do that with my audiences too, where we have a lot of fun with that. But during the keynote piece, so there is a little bit of music on my YouTube channel. My website has a couple of videos, offdutychief.com. Yeah, but you're right. I don't know. Where do I
love it?
How do I?
Tim, I did not get to brace you for Mr. Russell over here. He comes with a disclaimer.
I'm a sweet old man.
Yeah. Objection overruled, I guess.
Oh, no. He is. He just will begin to pick on you if you don't pick first. That's just what he does. That's his motto.
That's good.
It works out. To be fair, he always says that I am, what is it, ruthless? Russell,
you are when you're mad when they cross you.
Yeah, so you know, to be fair, that's just how this chemistry works. But no, Tim, I love your book. I went and bought it the moment that Anne came to me and we started working together, because I'm all about puppies and rainbows and positivity. I think that is a beautiful thing. And I think
I do hate that. I do hate those words. He does.
But I do feel like it is something that is lacking. So I like to surround myself with that, because I like to just be a happy, chipper person, which is why I am the way that I am all the time. You can ask Russell that 100%. So thank you so much for taking your leap of faith with this book and for having another book in your chamber. I'm excited to hear and see when that book comes out and what impact it will also make on the world. And hey, thank you for your service and being a police officer and putting your life on the line every single day, right? They don't get enough recognition. So thank you so much for doing that. But Russell, last minute questions, comments, statements for you before we wrap up and you give me the evil eye.
Tim, where can they find your books? Where can they find your story?
Well, they're everywhere. They're on Amazon, directly through my publisher, through my website, offdutychief.com. Ingram has them, but I understand that the average consumer can't buy them from Ingram. I'm still navigating all of that, but I know they can just type in my name, Tim Agerbrotten, or Find Your Beat, Walk in the Rhythm of Life, and it pops up on just like magically. I'm doing book signings, and
there can't be more than one Agerbrotten, can there?
There are, and when I started looking, but we're all related because they made up the name when they came over from Norway, so that was pretty cool. Wow. So if you do find any Agerbrottens, send them my way. I want to meet my cousins. We're related.
Absolutely. Well, Tim, thank you for taking time out of your morning and hang out and chat with us here on Author Talk. It's always so much fun and such a delight. And when you have your next book come out, let us know. We would love to have you back.
10-4.
Absolutely. Well, you guys, we hope you all have a fantastic Monday, a great rest of your week, and make sure you join us next Monday to hear how this fairy tale ball goes that I'm making my husband and all of us go to. But until then, bye for now, everybody.
See ya.